Welcome to University Drive, your pathway to the transformational work of University of the Bahamas. Our goal is to build a better Bahamas by shaping tomorrow's leaders today, finding solutions to challenges, and forging new opportunities for growth. University Drive, where faculty, staff, students, and alumni travel the road of progress together with you. The past few years have been unprecedented. The global pandemic and climate crises have not only tested our resilience, but thrown a spotlight on the immense value of our healthcare heroes, our nurses. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Tamika Lundy, and welcome to University Drive. We have a truly special episode this time, as we have as our guests two University of the Bahamas faculty members who at one point dedicated their lives to the field of nursing, and I'm sure even now they still do, and are an integral part of nursing education. What's more is that they are a part of a collection of riveting stories in a new book that captures the essence of this noble profession. Dr. Teresa Adderley Smith and Dr. Shamel Sands, welcome and thank you for joining us both.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
And a pleasure to finally have you both join us. I believe you might very well be the first faculty from the School of Nursing joining us. So you have that special distinction, and we're here for it.
Yes.
Call to Care, Healing Hands and Caring Hearts. That's the name of the new book that celebrates how special and life-changing nursing is. And the both of you are among the collection of authors. What brought you both to this special project?
Well, Mrs. Bryce Seeley has been known to me for a number of years because she actually taught in the associate program many years ago at the college. And when she sent out the call for looking for nurses to be a part of a project, I was immediately interested. And so I wanted to know what it was all about. I thought it was very interesting that it was something that I probably could be a part of. So that was how I got involved. I knew her. I valued what she had contributed in nursing prior. And I respected her. So I trusted what she would, you know, what she was proposing.
And that would have been how long ago now?
Well, this really happened very quickly, Tamika. I think it's only been a few months. Was it May or June?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah, it was before the summer. She sent out her invitations, and I had a look. And so this thing happened very, very quickly. In fact, we wrote our chapters in a matter of a few weeks.
Yes. As a matter of fact.
And Teresa, you?
Yeah, so I was in the middle. I think you're right. We were, it was at the end of the semester. So things were winding down, and we say it's winding down, but it's really winding up at the end of the semester. And I got a call, and I'm like, oh, I'm not sure if I can do this because of, you know, my other responsibilities. And she said, yes, you can do it. Yes, you could do it. You have a story to tell. And, you know, in reflection, I always wanted to tell my story. And she didn't take much convincing, and I told her yes, and she sent me the paperwork, and then everything began.
Do you know what I found interesting when I was reading through the book? I found it interesting that in each of your stories, Shamel, you and Teresa, you, your grandmother was a beloved factor in your decision making, right? And we know that in the Bahamas, for many of us, nursing is a heritage that's passed down through generations. So let's start with you, Teresa. What does this calling mean to you personally, especially with that touching story about your interactions with your grandmother and how that helped to shape your decision?
Well, it's a funny side first, and then it becomes serious. So I am the fourth child of seven, and the three are boys, and then I became the fourth child, which is a girl. Now, I don't know if you know, but brothers could be controlling. And, they were back in the day, there was one telephone in the house, and, and everybody had to share this and share that. And my grandmother actually lived about 90 steps away from where we were living. And I would actually go to my grandmother's house to escape my brothers. So that's the funny side of it. And over the years, so this started like when I was about 7 years old. And so every day, then my grandmother became blind and dependent. She was on insulin and other medications. And of course, I was the one to be there. And I found myself caring in this, in that same sense of the word, caring for my grandmother, and helping and loving it. So what happened is I became a personal assistant, I became a secretary, I became the bread maker, and she just midwife on in Acklands. And she would talk to me about what they would do. In terms of, they call it cascading, in terms instead of saying vomiting and, things that they would do to rid themselves of toxins and make themselves healthy. And it was very intriguing for me, taking up for daily walks, and she was blind, setting the table for someone who was unable to see. And I began to love it. And she started to say, my mom. Then seated in my head, you'll be a nurse. Then my aunts would come by and say, look a little nursey, look a little nursey, And so I had no other choice when it was the time for grade 12 and we made this election. What do you want to be? What do you want to be when you grow up? There, back in the day, they used to do this newspaper article for persons who were going off to school. And there was a, my they put me in the newspaper. I still have the clipping. 1985, and it says she's going to be a nurse. So that is where that was seeded, and it grew, and here I am today.
All I can say is hashtag Grammys are great. Hashtag Grammys rule. And Shamel, your story.
Yes, I agree with those hashtags 100%. And so for me, it was a little bit different. I watched my grandmother care. If you had a look at my story, you see that she basically raised me for my formative years. So I just watch her. And she was one, she worked diligently, she worked hard, but she never complained. And because I admired her so much, I wanted to be just like her. And so as I was, when I was younger, I thought about it a whole lot. I got into high school. There were other things that I actually could have done. But a part of it was that my mother thought I was too young because I was only 16 to go off to a job perspective in the US. And then I thought, well, okay, you wanted to be a nurse. This is what you think you should be doing. And furthermore, the education was free. And so that's what I did because my grandmother didn't encourage me to do nursing. She was actually encouraging me to pursue medicine. But I told her I knew that I never wanted to do medicine. I would want to be a nurse instead. And that is how I came to enter nursing school.
That's a very powerful story. I don't think it's by accident that the title of the book that you both are in has two references to care and or caring. Call to care, healing hands and caring hearts. What is the role and the huge significance that caring plays in the nursing profession?
So there are
Well, I
many, many, many attributes related to nursing, and one of them, and you're hearing it threaded through even in your first question, caring. If you don't have a passion for others, and I tell the students this all the time, maybe we need to, you should consider another career because you have to have the empathy, which is another word that we can use. To in order to transfer to others, it is when persons are laying in their bed of affliction, I call it. You don't need other variables involved. Persons coming in with their own problems. Persons only wanting to be in nursing for a job. You need someone who is there who can touch that person in a way that that they can have healing. Healing comes with caring. So caring is an integral part of nursing. Yes.
And you, Shamel?
And so I endorse what Teresa would have said. For me, caring is, while the knowledge and the skills are important, if they are not encapsulated in care, in the nurse wanting to provide what is necessary to maintain or restore the health and welfare of an individual, a family, a community, or in some cases, ensure a peaceful and dignified death, then I don't think that you need to be in this profession because to be a nurse, you must be smart, you must be a critical thinker, you must be a problem solver, but you must also care.
You both have been nurses for many years, but you also have another perspective that is relevant, and that's being in nursing education. When you think about being called to care, when you think about having caring hearts and having empathy, in the profession, and then coming from the standpoint of you helping to educate the next generation of nurses, how do both of those things come together in how you do what you do?
It's a transition. For me, I believe you must first have that effective character, which is the caring. And as you begin to care for others, then you then find that, hey, this is something I need to share. So the next step that came was the preceptor. So while I worked on, I actually was trained in the United States. And while I worked in the United States, we had a preceptorship program. So persons would notice that. But notice individual nurses on the unit and say, it looks like you can do things. And then when you start pairing with the nursing students, the persons in the educational forum at the colleges and universities would then begin to notice you. And they'll say, look, you need to bring this over here. So as you begin to that innate nature that you have for caring, then it's transitioned into the nursing students and then taken into the classroom. So that's the transition. So my transition began at the bedside, and then it later progressed, and then as and then it just blossoms because it's not just about writing a program; it's about writing programs and curriculums in nursing. And it's just not about bedside nursing. Nursing has expanded worldwide into many other professions. So you begin to see the bigger picture and find your best fit in the whole spectrum.
I'm really interested in your points of view, Shamel.
Okay, so for me, I actually never thought, never dreamed I would end up in education, much less higher education. I thought that my knack was clinical practice. I knew I was exceptional at the bedside, and that's what I did. But what Teresa is saying is also true, though. You don't know who's watching while you're working. And for me, people were watching. When we had new pieces of equipment, any new technology, I was one of the first that wanted to learn. And I actually had no problem sharing that information. So another part of it is actually working in teaching hospitals where you have no choice. Because if you have students or if you have junior staff that come, for me, it was natural to want them to know what to do and how to do it. It actually made my job easier when you have people who know what to do and how to do it. So that was natural for me to take persons under my wing and show them, teach them. And so it started there. And then other persons recognized that, Shamel is pretty good at this. And I was invited to join various committees in the hospital. So I started my nursing education piece in clinical practice. And from there, I moved into academia. because I felt that I needed to touch the students before they even got to me in the preceptorship program in the hospital. And so that is how I made my transition. I just felt that I could do more if I got to them while they were still being molded in the nursing programs, more so than when they were already done, already RNs, even though they may have been new graduates. So that's how that was me.
That's a powerful story. Explain for our listeners again the term preceptor and what that means.
Okay, so when you have a preceptor, there is this relationship. It may be formalized where you have a nurse that is more senior, and it's not necessarily age, but in terms of experience, someone who is knowledgeable and someone who has a knack for sharing that knowledge that is paired with a newer or more junior nurse that comes into the clinical area. And for a specific period of time, you will, it's mentoring, showing them the ropes, as it were, in practice, because a lot of things, you know, they learn a lot of things in the classroom, but there is nothing like hands-on training in the trenches. And that's what you help them with, because that transition from the classroom into practice could be really traumatizing. And so the preceptor, that more senior nurse with more knowledge and skill, actually is there to help them navigate that, how to provide care, because they have the didactic information, but now pairing that with practice and getting it done in a timely manner, getting it done well, that's what the preceptor is there for. And if you have a good preceptor, you have a smooth transition. And as I said, that relationship may be formalized, but even after the formalized period, whether it's a matter of weeks or months, many times those relationships continue, right? They're still able to come to you and get advice even throughout the rest of their careers.
Only a few of us, I believe, I could be wrong. Only a few of us have not been touched by, helped by, healed by, nursed by a nurse. So nursing touches just about everyone. If you've not had any of those experiences, then you probably know someone who has. When you sat down to write your chapter, what was going through your mind in terms of the story that you wanted to tell, such that it would edify and uplift the profession, and also, I would imagine, be of some sort of inspiration and encouragement to those who are aspiring to be nurses?
Well, one of the things that came to my mind initially when Sister Seeley reached out to me is I wanted to reach the nurse that's not born yet, or the future nurse that's not born yet. I wanted to tell my story to let others know that sometimes in life, and there's a little backtrack. My story actually has a story about me being a single, unwed teenage mom who was actually enrolled in college. But my story was that with the support system, I was able to move through the program of nursing and become who I am today. So there's some nurse, somebody out there who is contemplating, who is a single mom, who has other things going on in their life, and they're saying, I cannot do it. But I want them to read that story and know that it is possible. And so for me, in reflection, it was really to speak to the nurse, the future nurse, who is thinking now at this very moment that they cannot do it. I just wanted to let them know, yes, you can. Yes, you can. And my chapter is actually called chapter number 51. And I know you're going to ask questions about that later. But when I say number 51, I moved myself from my fictitious 51 to number one. And that's why I see myself now. And I want persons to know that even though you're at the back of the line, you can get to the front. And that was the essence of my story.
Well, I can't say that I necessarily thought about the nurse yet unborn, but I certainly did think about the many nursing colleagues, nursing students who have touched my lives throughout these 36 years since I answered my call to join the nursing profession. And similar to Teresa, at the end of it, I wanted, well, quite frankly, Tamika, I think that I started writing this story in my head a very long time ago. And so I was pleased to have this opportunity to actually get it out of my head on paper. And even if my thought is, even if just one person, a nurse or otherwise, is touched, then I would have done enough, because you only need one person to speak into your life or to believe for it to change the trajectory of your life. And so telling my story, I wanted it to be relatable. I wanted to be honest. So I talk about my challenges. I talk about my feelings of inadequacy. And like Teresa, I want them to know that despite the challenges in life, throughout life, you can do this, but you don't have to do it alone.
That is such a powerful note for us to take a break on. We're talking to Dr. Shamel Sands and Dr. Teresa Adderley Smith, and we are talking about a new book called Call to Care, Healing Hands and Caring Hearts, that's focusing on the essence of nursing. We'll take this break and be back after this.
Are you ready to take your knowledge or career to new heights? Don't wait to invest in your future. Do it now. How? Earn a professional development certificate from University of the Bahamas. Whether you're looking to enhance your leadership abilities, sharpen your technical skills, or explore a new field entirely, our Continuing Education and Lifelong Learning Center has the ideal course for you. We offer single-phase electrical, ethics and procurement, accounting for entrepreneurship, stop managing, start leading, dynamic presentations, digital marketing, superior customer service, and justice of the peace. We even have courses on smartphone photography, TikTok videos, defensive driving, and interacting with difficult people. Or open the door to new languages with English as a second language, conversational Chinese, and Spanish in the workplace. Our instructors are experts in their fields, and they're here to support you every step of the way. Call us at 302-4449. Enroll today.
We're back here on University Drive with our guests, Dr. Teresa Adderley Smith and Dr. Shamel Sands, talking about the book Call to Care, Healing Hands and Caring Hearts. They both are professors or faculty members at University of the Bahamas in the School of Nursing and Allied Health Professions. Teresa, you shared a story before we went to the break about how, as you were doing your education abroad, you were a single mother. And you had to overcome some obstacles, but you endured. To me, that speaks about the power of the mind. And I know that for a lot of people who are ill, and when you're attending to them, you know, it's a spiritual overcoming that they're also going through. But a part of it, I would believe, is also about the power of the mind. Do you have the same kind of feeling? I mean, having overcome something as significant as that and succeeding, does that help to fuel the way that you attended to people as you became a nurse?
I believe, yes, that it underscored my passion for nursing, actually, and that drive to care. So here now, just hitting a little bit, just talking a little bit about the my journey. I was a teenage mom, yes, but luckily for me, I had a great support system. That same grandmother I spoke about, and my dear mom, they pushed me. My mom, she looked at me and she said, "Teresa, I know that you can do this." That's what she said to me before I left. She said, "I'm going to take this 8-month-old baby. I'm going to take care of it, take care of my grandchild, and you just go and you show me that you can do this." So that was the drive to take me through. And here now, When I came back, coincidentally, the baby was 13. That is so she, my mom, really was there to support me. And in my journey, I finished a 3-year nursing program in 2 years. And would you believe that in that time, I actually developed a very rare tumor in my trachea. And if you would know, getting a diagnosis like that could be detrimental to a 19, 20-year-old and having to drop out of nursing school. And my faculty members, they were very, very supportive. They came to the bedside and they said, "Teresa, we're going to hold. We're not even going to put that W, doesn't even show on my transcript today." And immediately after, I had 3 surgeries and 1 reconstructive surgery. And immediately after that surgery and into my 9 months of therapy, I was still attending nursing school with a tracheostomy tube. I have the pictures where I just, try to tape it down and go through it, but it was just my drive to finish. Number one, because I could hear my mom's voice, "You can do this." And number two, I wanted to give back. I wanted to do the nurses there that attended to me, I wanted to just give back to the to others, because I too was a patient while I was in nursing school. And so my story is, it's filled with these different drawbacks, but I did not allow it to stop me. As I see myself, when one of the things we had in as a part of entering nursing school, I went to Miami-Dade. You could not have a C grade on your report card. And here I was going through all that illness and so forth and having to think about my baby at home. And when I and so I'm like, I'm going in for the interview. And the lady was like, "Accept it. Accept it. You've made the mark." And so yeah, so it comes with the educational part, it comes with the passion, it comes with the drive, and it comes with the support system. So there, I know a lot of people are there because, I meet a lot of nursing students and they don't have that support system, but I try to be that support system. You would know that one of the things that I do for service is I'm a president. I was the former president of a civic organization that it supports women and girls. And that was because of this, because of them having me having to go through what I went through, and they may not be as fortunate to have the support system that I did. And so even through finance, I do it as well. So that's a part of my story, just a part, but all that's in the book.
The village is important. Those words of affirmation are important. They sow seeds into us, and you've triumphed. And as a result, you're able to now give back and sow back into the lives of others. Shamel, do you care to share anything that might have been significant to how you served? Any life moment, any experience that you can pinpoint to say, this was really instrumental in my future.
Well, in terms of life moment, I think, there are some parallels between the stories, Teresa's story and mine, because Teresa was not the only unwed teenage mom during nursing training, right? But the and I was here in the Bahamas, and there were people. Well, quite frankly, Tamika, even from I was a young child, because my mother had also been a single teenage mother, there were persons, I always got the feeling that there were people that didn't necessarily think that I would amount to much be just because of those circumstances, right? Some persons may actually say certain things to indicate that. I am a bit of I'm the type though that the very thing that you tell me I cannot do is the very thing that I will show you that I can do. And I get that attitude from the women, particularly in my family. My grandmother was chief of them. And she said to me, "One baby should not stop the show. Just don't keep doing it." And so for me, first of all, being almost counted out because of my background in terms of not coming from a traditional nuclear family, and then having gotten pregnant as a teenager while in nursing. I mean, one day, Tamika, I was walking on East Street up to the drugstore, and I was pregnant, walking with my sister, and a woman stopped to lean out of a car to reprimand me, to tell me that I was nothing. And so all of those things, have propelled me to, people need to know that regardless of what is said about you, the saying is, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And having that village is very important. And I've been telling this story to students, particularly my management students, for years now, so that they could know that it may not be a teenage pregnancy, but there are other things that they're going through. You keep a positive mindset, you trust in God, and you continue to push through.
And that is a lesson for the ages. You both are overcomers. So my question is, what is the most formidable challenge facing the nursing profession today? And how do we overcome that challenge or those challenges?
Go ahead, my colleague.
Actually, I took a very deep breath when Tamika asked that question. I was like, whoo, that's a lot. That's a very loaded question, Tamika. And any number of things come to mind. So, if I were to be honest, I'd start off by saying that I think that nurses and what they do in the various aspects of society need to be acknowledged and valued in tangible ways for what it is that they do and how they do it. Enough of the talk about how valued we are, how trusted we are, that isn't translating into tangibles, in my view. Nurses are still working in unfit conditions, still not receiving adequate remuneration. And there are a number of things in that regard. That I think governments and organizations need to attend to. And then I think nurses need to take an introspective look at who we are as a profession, where we've come from, and where we want to go. I think some of the challenges we experience may be linked to the fact that we struggle with knowing who we are and our value. I think that as we move forward, it's not just to be a focus on how educated nurses are, because nurses have been going out there, and so we have, I would say, more master's and PhD trained nurses than we've ever had. However, I think we also need to look at us not losing the caring aspect of nursing as we are in pursuit of these other things. So, big challenge in terms of being amply recognized in meaningful ways. And then, secondly, looking at ourselves to see how we can improve our own status, getting more involved in politics, policy, sitting at the tables in here and making our voices heard so that our work environments, our remuneration, our value is not just talked about, but we see, like I say, tangible, meaningful outputs as a result. And I'm sure that Teresa has much more to add to that, so I will leave her to finish off.
Yes, that list is long. But I just want to add too that yes, it's a rewarding, yes, and a lucrative career. However, in that comes the challenges. Whether it's long hours of working, because sometimes, the sick needs to be the persons who take care of the sick need to be taken care of too, so nurses can become sick. It could be the fact that there are not enough nurses out there to come and cover a shift. It could be that a nurse is
calling in because she is sick and she have other family, she has her family members to attend to. So yes, they're long hours. So there's definitely problem with scheduling. Then you have the emotional and involvement where we call it burnout. I worked in a HIV AIDS, and I worked in a transplant unit at the beginning of my career. And so you would see the same persons coming in over and over. I worked in intensive care, where you see a lot of death and dying, and then you become numb. I remember my daughter was now 27. She was a baby at the time, and my husband would say to me, "But you're not looking at this baby. The baby's crying." It's like she could be okay, you know, but that you become numb. So it plays a toll on your emotions as well, especially in your personal life. Then you have your physical demands, where when persons, I remember ICU patient told me when I came into the room, he said, "Do you know that there are 25,800 pins of light bulbs in that one bulb, and there's two flies over there that's dead?" And you know, it hit me that these patients, all they want is someone to open the door. They, you know, and so the physical demand is that, you know, we're torn between the 8 and the 10 patients that we have. And there they are, they just want somebody to open the door just so they can put whatever they are going through on you. So we have a lot of that on us to help uplift our patients. And then the last one I'm going to add is exposure. You know, the COVID-19 just came about, but that's just the end, the beginning of what we were always going through. Tuberculosis, HIV, chemicals, physical substances. We are exposed to that, and we bring those home to our family. And not having up to today, even though I'm in education, I take my shoes off at the door because that's something I was trained to do in my earlier life when I worked in the hospital. Because you bring these things at home, washing your uniform alone, one uniform in the in a load by itself, because you don't want to expose your family to different things. But you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel because nursing is changing. There's technology, robotic robots and electronic medical records that are helping to support us in that action. So it's still lucrative, it's still rewarding, but then yes, it has its challenges.
So let's talk about the elephant in the room because we have an attrition problem in the nursing sector in the Bahamas, contributed to by a number of things. Shamel, I believe you might have even done research in this area. I'd like to hear from you both on how we address that, how we turn things around, and how we make it more attractive for the many people who now aspire to be nurses and who in the future will aspire to be nurses.
Okay, so yes, Tamika, you are so right. My doctoral work actually looked at factors that influenced nurses' turnover intentions during the COVID-19 pandemic. Because initially I was looking at nursing turnover based on my conversations and observations over the years, and I realized that the problem was getting worse. Because initially, about 25 years ago, nurses have always been leaving. But 25 years ago, when you looked at nurses leaving the Bahamas and elsewhere in the Caribbean, our percentage was very low. But we see things changing, and they don't seem to be getting better. But when I looked at it in the research, I looked to see if specific job demands, and at that time, because we were in a pandemic, I could not help but look at the effect of COVID, right? Because around the world, we were hearing that nurses were retiring early and leaving because of COVID. So I looked at COVID as one of the job demands. And then workload, because of course, workload doubled, tripled in some areas because of COVID. And then I also looked at job resources. So the job demands have to do with those things that are strains and stresses in the workplace. And the job resources are seen as things that would be helpful to mitigate some of those stresses. And I was looking at things like collegial support, particularly from the physicians. material resources, managerial support. And I really thought, Tamika, that I would find that COVID and high workload would have increased the nurses' intention to leave, but that is not what I found. What I found interesting was that out of all of the things that I asked about, the support of their manager, if they had a manager that they thought was present, that looked out for them, that was supportive, they were less likely to want to leave. So that said to me, even though they said the workload was high, the workload was high, they had limited human resources, so they were short of staff, they had limited material resources. But if they had a manager that was looking out for them, that was present, that was supportive, they were less likely to leave. And I think that says a lot. Anecdotally, I think we knew some of this stuff, but we have, because quite frankly, my research, as far as I know, is the only piece of research that was conducted looking at nurse turnover intentions, particularly during the COVID-19 pandemic. There are various recommendations that we have. So the right people need to be placed in managerial positions. And then they need to be supported as well in their positions, right? So they're in terms of stemming this tide. So yes, we're not saying that they don't need to be better paid. The work environments need to improve, but the managerial support, that support from their immediate supervisor, they need to not to know, to see, to feel that they are supported.
Are the same?
Yes, I agree with my colleague and all that she said. I believe underscoring that is professionalism. So if we can promote all of what Shamel says, then professionalism will show. I know we are out there and, you know, the nursing is skated, like, you know, don't go there, don't do this, nurses this. But you remember, I said it earlier, that the persons who tend to the sick needs to be attended to as well. We cannot, there's something called Maslow hierarchy of needs. If we don't deal with the basics, then we cannot go there and self-actualize. So if we have in our own internal life, we have our family, we have our own finance, we have the burden of all those challenges that I listed, the emotions and all those different things, it's going to be very hard for professionalism to show. And so you're going to need that nurse who is motivated. And yes, money does motivate, but there are other things that also assist in the motivation. And it comes primarily from the management and the resources that we have that help support the work that we do. And so I will end by saying that, yes, the professionalism is what we're looking for, that self-actualization. And to get there, all the areas that my colleague indicated needs to be in place. And she is right. She would be one of the first to have written or published that document related to nursing practice in the Bahamas. And we are guided by evidence base. And the research has shown and the research has suggested, and we just need to follow through on the recommendations.
These are fascinating insights, and this is also a good place to take our second break. You're listening to University Drive. We'll be back after this.
Chapter One Bookstore is proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael H. Eldon Complex on University Drive. Shop with us on Monday through Saturday. You can contact us at 397-2650 or email at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. Chapter 1, The Premier Choice.
Back we are on University Drive, continuing our discussion about the nursing profession in the Bahamas. Our guests are Dr. Chamel Sands and Dr. Teresa Adderley Smith. So Chamel, before the break, you talked about the research that you conducted on the nursing profession and the nursing practice and the implications for the factors that contribute to attrition, workload, job demands, job resources, right? Supervision, supervisory abilities, and the like. Where can people find your research so that they can read that?
Well, actually, Tamika, I am in the process as we speak of writing up a manuscript for my results for publication, and then I will follow that up with one in terms of policy recommendations. However, I have conducted I've been a part of teams that have conducted other research that speaks to the well-being of nurses and turnover and turnover intentions during COVID. All they need to do is just Google me, right? Chamel Sands, Chamel Roll Sands, and Google Scholar, and have a look at the work there. And then just stay tuned in the next maybe 12, 14 weeks for my publication in terms of the results. But I will say, though, that upon the completion of my study, I did send an executive summary to the organization and other administrators, nurse administrators and otherwise, to inform them of my findings. The thing is, as Teresa said, we need to be guided by empirical data. And so it is my hope, as I would have suggested to them, that based on the findings, that we can start to develop empirically supported retention strategies.
Okay, and Teresa, I know you've done some research as well. What are your hopes in terms of how we use these kinds of findings to impact policy decisions and to positively impact the growth and development of the nursing profession?
Absolutely, absolutely. So what has happened, Tamika, around 2005, 2007, the university moved, we are the national tertiary education body that's for nursing. So we had first the diploma program, then we had the bachelor, the associate, and now the bachelor's. But around that time, we introduced research into our program, primarily to get nurses ready for the workplace. And to ensure that they are using evidence-based practice as a footstool to do whatever they do out there every day. How does that work? It means that, yes, I can write as much as I want. I can publish as much as I want, but I want my Bahamian nurses to grasp the concept of research. And hence, for me, in my research classes, I include Bahamian contexts. And by doing the Bahamian context, it tells you that it makes them aware that, hey, this is something doable. This is something we can do among ourselves. And so I feel so good when my former students will contact me and say, Dr. Adi, I'm in the process of doing this research. So it's going to catch. It's going to catch. Persons are going to start to reach out. They reach out to Chamel, as Dr. Chamel as well. And they'll say, Dr. Chamel, what are you writing on? What Chamel and I do is if we see something of interest, we bring in our peers, the ones who are not doing research. We call them in, we add them to it so they can feel it. And so this is where I want to see research go in the Bahamas, that everyone is aware, the awareness. We need to bring awareness and then practice. You cannot practice. Nursing is a science. It's an art. So we need to have something to guide us, and that is the science based on empirical data.
Okay, so we started our discussion on the book that you both are in, where you're contributing your recollections and perspectives on the profession. You each wrote a chapter. What do you want the person reading your chapter, Chamel, to come away with, having concluded that? And then What note would you want to strike with the book overall?
Okay, so the person reading the book, and as I indicated, I wasn't only merely thinking of nurses, because I think that the stories in this book, my story, can resonate with persons from various professions at various stages in their lives. So the person that reads it, I want them to. And this goes even generally. So my take is that I want them to take away that whatever their dream is possible. However, it requires commitment to the work, dedication, the right support system, the right mindset. And for me, it involved my belief in God. Because I could not do it. So I couldn't do it without that village of support and without my belief in God. That is what sustained me. So that is what I want them to take away. You have a big dream, you go for it. It is indeed possible if you believe, but you need to do the work.
That's another powerful tidbit there. And for you, Teresa?
And for me, as I would have alluded earlier, I started off my chapters number 51. And I said that because I was not selected at the beginning to join my nursing program, because at that time they had 50 spaces. And I call myself 51, even though, you know, at the time I was more than qualified to get in. And I used that to push me through that number 51 and the words of my mom. When I left to go off to college in the U.S., she says, Teresa, you can do it. And so I propelled myself and I came back to give back to my country. That's so important to me. That, yes, you can get all the degrees and experience that you want, but we need our nurses home. We need them to come and feed back and give back to the community, give back to nursing. I am now a professor of nursing, and so that underscores my ability to bring back the next generation, to help the next generation of nurses. But the biggest part of my book is when my mom said, Teresa, you can do it. And at the end of my chapter, I said, Mom, I'm back. I've given the national, assisted in national development of nurses, and I am now number one. So that's the end of my chapter. I am number one. So it's just a fictional way of me saying that I believe that I've done my contribution in nursing. And I believe that, and through the, you know, the guidance of God, like as Shamel says, and the support of my family, that I was able to come back and give back to national development. We need our nurses back. We need our nurses to come back home.
I read in your chapter where you say, may my journey serve as a reminder to all who hear it, that with the love and support of those we hold dear, there is no dream too big, no obstacle too great, and no limit to what we can achieve. So sound a note of encouragement to people who might be struggling right now.
You just said it. That's it. There's no dream too big. I tell persons, you cannot dream unless you're exposed to something. So if you are exposed to the feeling that you want to be the best that you can be, that's the dream. You can make it happen. You just need, all you need is that one little feeling that I call it, in research, we call it a phenomenon, okay? That it can happen and it will happen. So we can. I'll just end with that. You cannot dream unless you're exposed. And that exposure begins with broadening your mind, going back to school, being the best that you can be. And I encourage my nursing students, all the nurses out there, my colleagues, we can do it. And as everybody know, I'm here and available to support in any which way I can.
And Shamel, for you, what jumped out at me is what you wrote where you said, even as an experienced practitioner, remember the importance of self-care. A well-nurtured nurse is happier, more satisfied, and performs better. Embrace change as a natural part of life's journey. How do you turn that into your note of encouragement as we wrap up?
Well, first of all, it's about taking time to care for you. So regardless of what is happening around you, what is happening at work, you need to take care of you. You can only be your best you when you are well. So you do that first. And then once you would have done that, I use the acronym PUSH, P-U-S-H. The P can stand for any number of things. I start off with prayer. I continue with plan. And then you proceed, you persevere, and then you praise until something happens. That something is whatever your next big dream is. Go and get it.
Okay, so there is a good place for us to transition into one final wrap up, which is, where do people get the book?
I was waiting on that. Each of us have our copies, and it's also on Amazon, but the Amazon has the Kindle version. But there's nothing like a author signed copy. And I can tell you, I've had lots and lots of persons reaching out to me with their congratulations and their purchase of the book. And so all authors have a copy. And so if anyone knows me personally, they know how to reach me. And Shamel, I don't know if you want to say something.
Yeah, so same here. I am on LinkedIn, Facebook. There are persons who can contact me through the university, because as Therese indicated, we each have our copies of the book for sale. And I too have I've been overwhelmed by the congratulations and the support in terms of sales of the book. So just reach out to us.
Okay. Well, the book is called Call to Care, Healing Hands and Caring Hearts. I want to thank you both, Dr. Shamel Sands and Dr. Theresa Adderley Smith, for joining us on University Drive. You have an open invitation to join us again sometime in the future. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to our listeners for joining us for this episode of University Drive. I've been your host, Tamika Lundy. Take care for now.
University Drive is a production of the Office of University Relations at University of the Bahamas. All rights reserved.